Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, still the best show on the internet. This is the knowledge part. This is March 23rd, 2007, Friday morning, Friday afternoon, Friday evening, depending on where you are. Could be Saturday if you're over in Japan, actually, or Australia. Anyway, we want to thank Shania Pelka for being on last week. She's an amazing guest. Sorry we couldn't get all your calls in. You know, I'm just learning how the system works. John changes it every week. So we're going to have Matthew Perry on this week. He's a neighbor of mine in Newport. I've never met the man, but I guess he's been in Tibet, and he's a businessman. So it'll be a real interesting talking to a Tibetan businessman. And so we should have some fun with that. And we'll go ahead and start the, what would I call the fun part right now, and get this show on the road. Like a big toad. And hopefully we'll be able to, don't forget, by the way, to use that fast chat on the front page of the BBS radio. That really gets through, and that's something I can answer questions on or ask the guest when I see the questions there. So we're going to start with Dr. Fred Bell in the tape series, where you're saving yourself probably about $300 now by getting this off the archives. So we shall proceed here. I hear the weight. Oh, the sound of that spaceship. Can't beat a good spaceship sound.
You all enjoyed that meditation, and now what I want to do is get further into the different things that we're covering here today.
The meditation was last week. You missed it, by the way. Let's go back to the archive.
We're going
to
talk about the etheric body. Now realize that we've just been through seven levels of consciousness. So now we're going to go forget the egoic, monadic, etmic, the intuitive, mental, astral, and get all the way down to the physical. That's where we're going to go, physical plane. Everybody says, oh, I have more fun on the higher planes. That may be so, but now if we have to get down to understanding the upper levels of the physical plane, because if you don't understand them, that's where you're going to stay. You're going to be stuck. And it doesn't mean that you have to be a mental giant to transcend or move into the fourth dimension through the physical planes, by understanding them on an intellectual level. Quite the contrary. It's better that if you just felt the understanding of what the higher planes are about, and through this feeling, we would move through into the other planes. But the fact is, you must develop certain parts of your body in order to get through these other planes of consciousness. And I'm going to talk about, first of all, I'm going to talk a little bit about the etheric body. Now, the etheric body interpenetrates every cell in the body. And if you want to see how that's done, turn to page 178 in Death of Ignorance. And you'll see a picture there of the nuclear membrane, of which I have spoken of in many different ways. And it looks sort of like a golf ball. And if you look at a golf ball, the golf ball has little, like, indentations on it. Like, it's a white ball with little, like, little dents on it all over. Comparing that to the nuclear membrane, you're going to see a bunch of little holes all over it. And those little holes, you say, well, what go through those holes? Air? No, air doesn't go through those holes. The etheric body goes through those holes. And the etheric body is the link up to these higher levels. And in order to get higher in consciousness and to move into the fourth dimension, you really have to cement those holes up with a densified nuclear etheric field. Now, within the etheric body itself, there are several force centers, and we've been talking about them already. They're known The existence of these chakras has been known for centuries, and they are described in many metaphysical books throughout the East, particularly in the Hindu sacred writings, from the Bhagavad Gita, the different books that the Rigas that our friend Scott Wolf was talking about. There are many different things that they're spoken in which realize that information came directly from the Pleiades. They arise in the etheric portion of the nerve centers within the spine, but terminate the circular depressions, meaning that there are all the nerves going through the body, and we talked about the nerves in the earlier part of the seminar. We talked about the nerves, and when we talked about minerals, the three different nervous ganglia in the body, and how it related and created magnetism and all that, looking at this electrical wire. But now let's use our microscopic vision and go in within the wire itself, the substance of the wire itself within the body. Remember, they got this ganglia of wires coming down from the brain, and within these ganglia we have the chemicals of sodium, potassium, and phosphorus, and these are separated by separate pumping stations known as nodes of Renier. So visualize, looking at it visually and looking from the brain down through to the feet, we will see these nerves, and these nerves will have these little pumps like wires, and these pumps are pumping energy. If we were to go a step farther now and look at the nerves through a huge microscope, we'd see each and every nerve made up of many, many cells. Within each cell, we would find a nuclear membrane, or the nucleus of the cell. If we go down to the nucleus of the cell, we would see these holes in the nuclear membrane, because the nuclear membrane looks like a golf ball. And within these holes, we would realize that there's the etheric body of consciousness coming through, and then etheric body of consciousness is getting its energy from the astral plane, and i.e. other planes of consciousness. And it becomes necessary to bring the whole nervous system up to the vibratory level of the command signals that are coming from the astral etheric plane into the nucleus, or the brain centers of the nuclear membranes within the cells, which make up this whole central nervous system, potassium, sodium, and phosphorus. So therefore, we have to put our mind energy, our consciousness, down on this area and build it, make these little holes within the nuclear membrane become more, instead of rather just a little subtle energy going through there to give consciousness to the cells how to reproduce, we have to make it rain and rain and rain and rain more consciousness until these little holes are filled with etheric substance, because remember, energy follows thought on this level. And I've got to clarify that a little bit more by saying that, you know, the mind is the slayer of the real, so don't rely on the mind to give you, decisions. Take your decisions from life as it presents the solutions to you. But at the same time, the mind can be used as a great focal lens to bring upon the physical body higher and higher currents of etheric energy. That's what I'm trying to get across at this point. Now, looking at these holes that we're talking about, these holes would go out, and you have like an opening to the hole, and the energy would come out and kind of flare into like a trumpet-like opening. And this trumpet-like opening would represent the input. And I usually tell people this kind of looks like a morning glory. So imagine these holes coming out of the cells of the nuclear membrane. And I must specify not all the cells in the body's nuclear membrane, but the areas in the chakra centers themselves. For example, if you're looking on the central nervous system in a nuclear membrane, like I showed you earlier in the book, on page 178, then you would, that's the normal hole. But if you get down into the chakra areas, these nuclear membranes of the cells there look a little different. The golf ball similarity is still there, but the openings, or this is the inputs for the entire system, the main input of the entire system. And so being the main input of the entire system, it's like a funnel. So out of these little holes comes a funnel. So this funnel gathers energy, which then concentrates and sends it down to the chakras, the chakra DNA cells, nuclear membranes of them. Of course, that shoots it out into the aura field, because when we talked about the chakras being the input of vibration then changing the endocrine structure, then releasing or secreting hormones depending on the stimulus coming from the chakras. So now, by now, you're starting to get a picture of what I'm talking about. If not, all you have to do is go back and listen to the tapes again two or three times. And don't feel embarrassed to do that. I listen to these, I read my own book, Death of Ignorance, over and over again, because we have a tendency to forget certain things when we move on to other levels. And a lot of other tapes of other people that I've studied, I also often listen to them many times over, because I find that listening to them many times over, I learn finally. The human brain is like a muscle, and you have to work it and work it and work it and work it. And don't be embarrassed by having to work the human brain over and over and over again. And then and you say, well, my neighbor down here, he reads the book once, and he gets the idea right away, and I have to read it six times. Well, let me tell you something about Fred Bell. If the neighbor read it once and you read it six times, Fred Bell read it 25 times. Because I'll tell you something about repetition. Repetition is the mother of success. I learned that a long time ago. But when I learn it, when I read it 20 times, I know it forever. And that's the same with anybody. You go over and over and over this material. Some of these tapes you're going to have to probably go over 25 times. So anyway, painting the picture, we realize that the etheric body interpenetrates the cells of the physical body, and the inputs of the energy of the etheric body come from within the chakras themselves. The chakras themselves basically deviate from the rest of the etheric body, where it interpenetrates the body, as being a source of information, meaning that somewhere in the etheric body of man, which interpenetrates all cells, has to be an input. And the chakras happen to be the input. What determines that, of course, is once again the frequency of the DNA, which is an interpenetration of energy coming through the etheric levels, coming up from the higher astral levels. If you wonder, well, where did this consciousness start? In other words, what determines what cell becomes a chakra and what cell becomes a regular cell in the body? This goes up on the astral level, and this is determined at the moment that the woman gets pregnant in the body, when certain commands from the 46 chromosome base of the male-female combination take place, in that consciousness of those 46 chromosomes, not being 49 chromosomes or 32 chromosomes, in that consciousness itself is what is determining where the chakra points are going to be. And we'll maybe get into that in another tape series later if you want to get deeper in that. But hopefully by the time this tape series is completed and you understand at least half of it, you'll be able to answer some of these questions for yourself. So anyway, we have different chakras going on in the body. One of the chakras, which is at the base of the spine, which is at the back of the body, over the extreme lower end of the spine. This chakra is interesting. It's specialized to absorb a force known as kundalini that emanates from the earth and gives life to the organs of the body. This force is present, this force is just becoming known to the physical science. And the physical science is getting more and more into it. The kundalini force, of course, if you look at the spine as an energy field, as what I always tell people, as a linear accelerator, and you look at the brain, I mean, we talked about how the brain works, as a receiver of energy. And if you take the kundalini force and you send it up the body, it changes something in the body. And what it changes in the body is the amount of resistance that it takes electricity to move from the brain down to the base of the spine. Now, it takes a certain amount of energy to move down to the base of the spine. If you remember back in the aura fields, I covered it a little bit. So what happens is, when the kundalini rises, it takes a lot less energy from the brain to receive energy from the base of the spine, or vice versa. Now, the other thing that's interesting, a lot of people don't understand, is that the spine is just like a freeway. Let's look at the spine as a freeway. And if you're in a car starting from the base of the spine, where the buttocks area is, and driving down towards the brain, if you're in harmony, it's all downhill. So you have gravity or momentum to pull your transportation source to a higher and higher momentum as it, as it arrives at the brain. Whereas if you're not working with the kundalini force, you have to drive uphill. And so if you have to drive uphill from the base of the spine to arrive at the brain, what happens is it takes a lot more energy. And as a result of having to use that more energy, the sexual fluids, which are moving up the base of the spine to the brain, only cause the sexual activity of the brain to increase. Whereas if you're going downhill, by the time that you reach the brain, starting at the base of the spine, what happens is then is that if you're going downhill because the kundalini is raised, then what happens is when you reach the base of the spine, the brain, is that the energy in the brain is tremendously elevated from the sexual to the spiritual, and you become incredibly creative. And so it's very good to work on the kundalini force, because that enhances or builds the spiritual energy, the creative energy of the body. This is great for engineers or artists or people like that to understand. The next center, situated over the spleen, and the spleen is a vitalizing center of taking the prana from the vitality globule, which we're in, converting it directly into spiritual, physical consciousness. In other words, becoming aware of what's going on. Anyway, the spleen is specialized to receive vitality or prana from the sun. In this center, prana is split up and distributed to various parts of the body, vitalizing the many nerve centers and causing a flow of ethers over the physical nerves. The other centers, as we shall see, and I shall explain more, are links by means of which forces from the subtle bodies are expressed through the physical body. The term ether that I'm using right here to describe this borderland of matter is just becoming clearly defined by New Age scientists. However, in the past, metaphysical people, students, and clairvoyants have seen the etheric forces by their extended vision and have described them in terms of their own coinage. This happens an awful lot, and that's why there hasn't been validity in the field. Now we're trying to validate the field by bringing it to you in a scientific manner. Scientists, on the other hand, have discovered the laws governing the phenomena of certain lower ethers, and many valuable inventions have resulted. So we know the ethers by their products. New Age science is destined to meet with traditional metaphysical science in this era, as is extraterrestrial science. Now, I'm sure I've heard a lot of you remember about Marconi, famed as the inventor of the wireless, or transmitting through the air. He is usually regarded as the first to use the etheric forces in radio transmission, thus opening the door to the vast development of intercommunication that is so rapidly drawing all peoples of the world into a close-knit human fellowship. And if you look at what Ted Turner is doing right now, about when we were talking about the cave and bringing out the consciousness to the where the fact that there was, oh my God, we now have gas because we've seen water boil create steam. Well, look at the consciousness of the whole planet during this, what I would call 30-day war that we had over in Iraq. I mean, the whole world is tuned in. Pretty soon, the whole world will come to one understanding. Now, when I say the whole world was turning, I have to exclude the Iraqis who were misinformed, but sooner or later they're going to be realizing that, and that's a whole other consciousness. Just as our planetary body is permeated by these invisible yet potent forces, so is the physical body of man. They constitute a field of force, an etheric double. And just as the etheric envelope of the earth is by the means which the universal and solar fire flow into our planet, so the etheric double interpenetrates man's physical body and is the channel for the inflow of vitality or life force from the surrounding network of global forces. Life could not exist on Earth without this etheric envelope, since it is the medium for those forces in nature that animate forms. Now, we'll get into animation big time when we get down into the carbon atom a little bit later on. Occultists reverently refer to the universal life as the Christ consciousness, and so do metaphysicians, so do even the extraterrestrials to a degree, or the Christ life. Again, we speak of the world of life spirit, meaning not only one of the planes of spirit matter, but also the exalted state of consciousness in which only one universal life is recognized. The supreme master of human evolution, I don't say life evolution, I said human evolution, Jesus Christ, is the world's outstanding example of what the attainment of this universal consciousness can mean. And there's nobody that can deny that fact. Unless they're not quite there yet. By the law of reflection, familiar to all of us, this high plane of universal life is a prototype of the etheric realm and its manifold phenomenon. Things visible and tangible in the etheric realm are signs and tokens of great powers resident in the higher realm of life spirit and Christ consciousness. This means that there is a very intimate connection between the Christ life and the life forces which operate in the twilight realm of matter, in which the material science is groping its way. Through mental, moral, and physical discipline, according to spiritual law, a new etheric sheath is actually formed within the refined essences of the etheric body. The second etheric structure is a prerequisite to all initiatory development, and that's what we're all trying to do, is initiate ourselves into this next consciousness. Hence, the etheric body progress through higher spiritual planes or states of initiation would be an impossibility. I just read and commented through the lunar section of Death of Ignorance, as you could probably tell. Okay, now we're getting down into the etheric part of the body, the four ethers. Metaphysical science. I'm reading from Death of Ignorance now. I'm going to read your reading for a little while here, so I think it's necessary. Metaphysical science teaches that the ethers are capable of division into four states or properties by varying degrees of density, each having its own special function. The densest of the four ethers is called the chemical ether because it is the field of activity for the chemical forces, and we talked about the chemistry, biochemistry, which underlie the structure of our material universe, and in which is realized the alchemist's dream of transmuting one element into another. It is so nearly material that only a slight expression of sight is necessary to see it. Its basic color is dark blue, and it is sometimes observed under the appearance of blue flames or when the gas is turned very low. Or it may have the appearance of thick mist or smoke. And I know in our light shows a lot, which we do here in Laguna Beach, that we oftentimes see this energy field. In this ether, the New Age chemist may be able to study the activities of chemical forces, which he knows now, partly through their results and not by direct observation. In the human organism, this ether seems to take the form of prisms through which the color of solar energy radiates, assuming a rosy hue. Now, this, of course, does change during the times of day. These prismatic ether atoms seem to be embedded in the center of the physical body atoms. The chemical ether is a twofold current, possessing a positive-negative pole of function. All spirit of life is dual in manifestation, expressing itself as positive, negative, or masculine, female. The positive etheric current attracts and builds the physical atoms of the body, and the negative current disintegrates and eliminates them. Thus, we may describe the chemical ether as a whirlpool of forces into which new molecules flow through the positive pole out, and which old molecules flow out through the negative pole. And this has to do with the reproduction of the cell. These molecules have actually been recognized in some instances as pertaining to known substance. To the lay mind, this process suggests the vital electricity converts the body into a kind of electromagnet for attracting or holding elements needed in bodybuilding and for rejecting or eliminating those not needed. The flow of life force is corresponding to the turning off and turning on of a current. The second ether, known to the metaphysical sciences, is called the life ether because it is concerned with the propagation of the species, whether it be a plant, animal, or man. Physical science is eagerly anticipating the day when it can study these forces at first hand. And this is just starting now to happen. But the time is not too far away before we start, because of the biofeedback equipment that we're working with now. We're starting to be able to make measurements. One of the people that I worked with, a scientist that was an Indian guy, Quentin McConnell, back around 1979, had developed a spectral analyzer that hooked directly to plants. And I remember Peter Tompkins was doing research with plants at the time, and he was greatly impressed with it because it didn't just measure the resistance changes in the leaves like the ordinary biochemistry equipment does, but this particular equipment would actually look at the central nervous system of the plant itself when the plant was acclimated to a human being. We got some amazing results. The life ether is also a positive and negative, and it is within it the secret of sex will be found. The knowledge of this ether will give to biological science control of sex of the inborn infants and even adults. Sex hormones are crystallizations in this ether. Differentiation of the sexes as we know it today will seem very crude and primitive to the future generations. If you have an etheric vision, blood is seen to course through the veins in the form of gas. which reminds of the reminds one of the legend that certain spirits known to Oriental mythology are said to have fire in their veins instead of blood. Now, blood, by the way, is a crystallization of the life ether, and when we get into blood later on, we're going to really talk about how it brings a spiritual force to the body. The ancient Greeks thought that the veins of their gods were filled with nectar instead of blood, a hint again of the miraculous power stored in the life ether. The two other ethers, chemical and life ethers, these two that we're talking about now, surround and interpenetrate the physical form, constituting its matrix. The chemical ether reveals itself as a blue field, whilst the color radiation of the life ether is a rosy or orange hue, which varies somewhat according to species and status and evolution, but is always present where life is found. In the plant kingdom, it is a delicate pink-orange, the color of a certain lotus known in the Orient. In the human kingdom, it is described as the color of newborn peach blossoms, a deep pink, with a suggestion of blue or violet overtones. And when you get more into seeing aura fields, when you get more and more into our equipment, you'll be able to see aura fields because it opens up that consciousness that's normally blocked in most people. It's really interesting to see on certain days what kinds of colors people have, and now that you've been through the meditation, you begin to see how the different colors relate to the different consciousness and the different levels. For example, if we're looking at a peach color, then peach is obviously some offshoot of orange and white, kind of a cream color. White, of course, is the first aspect, the ray aspect, which we would... And the orange part would be more in the solar plexus. So it's a combination of bringing the will down into power. Motion and color are characterized by the planetary light ether. A high degree of spiritual perception is necessary for investigating these ethers, I might point out. But it doesn't take that much time to develop that if you go slowly. The meditation that we did earlier, if you go back to it a few more times, it'll really help you because you'll begin to see this in your meditation. The light ether is an ether that sparkles and flashes with all the hues of the rainbow. It is sensitive to the presence of light, whether from the sun or artificial luminance, or whether it beats or pulsates in a wing-like motion like seeds of light. Many, or a few, according to the intensity of light, float about in it. And we would consider this to be possibly the photon of physics. Photon is the first level of the astral, as a matter of the physical plane. So the photon is made up of, the light ether is made up of the photon, but the photon itself, its consciousness, its intelligence, coming down from the astral plane. And when we get into lasers, we'll talk about that more. The light ether also has a connection with blood and human beings, as its positive current infuses the blood with heat and controls circulation as well. The negative current operates through the five senses, especially sight. Although the basic color of the light ether is said to be the beautiful golden effulgence, described it as the Christ ray, it actually displays all the colors of the spectrum. Remember, we talked about the second ray, the sun, as the Christ ray. And I'm trying to be religious in this discussion about the mentioning of Christ ray and the colors. It just happens to be that's what it's called. The extraterrestrials call it something else, but I mean, it's the same thing. Because this ether is the avenue for sensation, vitalizing the nerves, and this means it goes through the parasympathetic nervous system, which we talked about early. The autonomic, remember, in the very first part is making subconscious things operate in the body. The parasympathetic nervous system is the nervous region in the body that causes the sensation of feeling. So it's this ether that's the consciousness. It goes from the electrical sensation to the to the etheric sensation, when it becomes the etheric sensation, and we'll talk about that actual interplay in a minute. That's when it reaches consciousness as a feeling. Just when the electricity is moving through the body, per se. Let's say if I dropped a brick on your foot, or you drop one on your own foot, I don't want to take the responsibility, but you'd feel pain. But before you felt the pain, that would be the electrical, which would be opening up and conducting to the brain. But with the electrical conducting, you wouldn't feel anything until the etheric was galvanized. As soon as the etheric counterpart of the electrical, or what we call the etheric precursing area or avenue, is opened, then you feel the pain. The feeling comes with the opening of this energy field. Now, realize that when you talk about the pyramid and the receptor, these other devices in the systems, these are precursing devices. You should now start to get a feeling for where we're coming from on this level. Because this ether is the avenue of sensation, and it makes it a channel for sensations which do not ordinarily register in the brain, the eye begins to see colors not usually visible. The ear begins to hear sounds not normally audible. Now, what I'm saying here is, I'm making a commentary about page 129 from The Death of Ignorance, reading and commenting at the same time, which I'll be doing for a few more minutes here. What we're saying here basically is that once you put more of your energy from the electricity and more of your consciousness towards the galvanization of the etheric levels, your sensitivity goes beyond electricity, which is really important. Now, what's this, even the sense of touch is stimulated so an individual can feel etheric currents both in his own body and in the atmosphere. Biological electricity is an expression of the negative pole of the light ether, as is biological heat the expression of the positive pole of this particular light ether. And science has already been able to create metals that when you put electricity into them, polarized by one way, they get hot, and by polarizing the other, they get cold. So this science is quickly coming upon this. Most attenuated and refined of all the etheric substances is the fourth reflecting ether, which is one up by the astral plane. And when I say up by, I mean inside of. In other words, if you look at the atom, we're getting smaller and smaller in the subcomponents of the atom itself. And now we're down to the level of the last subcomponent on the physical plane, which becomes energy on the astral plane. The substance is clear and luminous and is truly reflective of the eternal truth as transcribed upon the scroll of ages. It too has a positive negative aspect, but this ether is scarcely physical at all in any known sense of the word. It is the avenue through which thought makes its impression upon the human brain. And if you begin to look at what we're talking about here, we said the electricity was one level of energy, and then as it got more sensitive, you had to go to the light ether, and then finally the reflecting ether makes this impression on the human brain. It's the final aspect of the emotional energy fields that make this touch possible. The masculine or positive aspect of the reflecting ether works through the brain and voluntary nervous system, promoting reason and creative activity. The negative or the female aspect operates in and through the involuntary nervous system, promoting intuition, feeling. The positive pole of the reflecting ether is therefore a special channel of the ego. The negative pole, that of the race spirit, a collective soul. The ego is now gradually taking over the functions formerly governed by the race spirit or God of our fathers. It is therefore invading the sympathetic system, awakening
this seminar series is continued on the other side.
Well, that was fun. So now we'll switch her over here, do the big switcheroo, and I'll get this thing cranked right up again. We're running right on the schedule like I like to run. I hope you're finding that interesting. And I'll do some live shows. Get your questions ready out there if you want to talk about this stuff live on the air, because I don't mind doing it. It's a lot of fun. But you got to be studied up a bit so you know how to understand the answers. Sometimes people ask questions and not quite ready for the answer yet. But anyhow, here we go again.
Awakening to it a new life under the control of individual will and discovering many new miraculous powers latent therein. Now, we talked about initiation earlier before the meditation. The work of initiation stimulates both aspects of this ether in a new and higher activity. No ether is more important than this reflecting ether in the mysterious labor of initiation. This is where you become actually enlightened or aware of becoming. It's a state of growing awareness, you might look at it from lay terms. The reflecting ether is a negative aspect in the subconscious mind nature of man. It is a blue-white crystal in which the seer reads certain records, but it is not the true
memory of nature found in the higher sphere, which of course would be the Akashic records. Now that we have observed the four states of ether, remember that all these are part of the physical plane, and that each ether exists inside of each other. One is and at the fourth state or ionic state, their compound density is so great that gravity precipitates them, and they become gases, which are attracted not only to each other, but also to the earth. Once impressed inside the atmosphere, they become solids and liquids. As our bodies and environments are thus fashioned, let us examine our bodies more closely. Study of the etheric body and its relationship to the physical realms presents us linking of space, time, motion, gravity, and magnetism. Here is how gravity comes into our being. And those of you that are designing anti-gravity systems, there are some real hints to how these things work. Remember, in our systems three, the systems three unlocks the gravity linkage in the body and allows people to levitate. We've had some very successful levitations in our systems three. A lot of the TM people have done their hopping, their siddhis, because this system three speeds up the consciousness on a subconscious level to teach our body how to overcome gravity. And this means you do become lighter. Now, gravity does not work at all like most people think, and it is not related to magnetism. And I say it is not related to magnetism. Magnetism is a physical plane of energy. Gravity is a universal fact existing on all planes, simultaneously holding them together in perfect balance. An understanding of gravity is not necessary to overcome its effects. Every atom in the body possesses consciousness. The consciousness receives its direction from the mind. The mind can think positive, and consciousness of the atom spontaneously forms molecules which begin to form healthy cells. The conscious mind does not have to understand how this process occurs, but only has to think positively about its occurrence. The second thing necessary to know about gravity is the physical plane's rebounding action called karma. It makes us lighter or heavier physically in relation to the Earth's karma by simple definition, is the old philosophy, an eye for an eye, give love and you shall receive love, serve others and you in turn shall be served, or as I like to say in my lectures, the energy seeks its own balance. The third thing to understand about gravity is the action of the will and its purpose for self-achievement. Anyone who seeks to find the principle of anti-gravity will find it. Some strive for conscious development so they may dominate and use others, while the majority strive to release themselves from the limited bonds of earthly karma so that they may help others develop more efficiently. Either motive can bring us to the state of levitation, but the one who reaches it for selfish gains will be a slave to it, while the one who accepts it as a step towards better self-improvement will pass on to higher goals and accomplishments. Now, the pyramid works through the etheric double. Every cell in our bodies is permeated with small holes viewable at 250,000 times on an electron microscope. This energy or etheric current is still invisible like electricity through a wire, but you can see with a microscope the etheric passageway. These holes in the brain cell or nucleus where the etheric energy passes, giving each cell an etheric brain to control physical growth. The sum total of all these cells forms the etheric brain or body. In pyramid energy, well, first of all, let me just elaborate a little bit on that. Just imagine that all the cells in the body have holes in them. When all these cells in the body have holes in them, they have to be filled with something. We're talking about the nuclear membrane here, and I touched on this earlier. This touching, this connecting energy is the etheric current, and it locks the etheric body down to the physical body. It's where the consciousness comes through these holes. And as you densify the etheric, you can lighten the physical. In pyramid energy, this is level one, or the path of the violet ray, of ceremonial order and magic, depending on who is a relative observer and what level he can perceive, view, cognize, and then maintain and store. The ability to contain knowledge when exposed to it and realize its existence long enough to recall it again and again for experience is what we call memory. Memory is magnetic. Now, we'll be talking about that when we get into the human brain. Magnetism attracts into itself its opposite pole and is expressed as a full circle, half north pole, half south pole. The midway point to the equator is a neutral line of attraction or gravity. This fact in the human brain allows thought energy to travel along the magnetic equator formed an etheric counterpart of its gray matter, and thus gravity can be observed as holding our unifying principle in human mind as well as the universal mind. This individual gravity we all possess forms our ego, which grows with the passage of time. The invisible part of the physical body is of great importance to us, for it is the vehicle through which steams of vitality, which keeps the body alive, and without it is a bridge to convey undulations of thought and feeling from the astral to the visible, denser physical matter. The ego could make no use of the cells of the brain. It is clearly visible to the clairvoyant as the mass of faintly luminous violet-gray mist interpenetrating the dense part of the body and extending very slightly beyond it. The life of the physical body is one of perpetual change, and in order that we shall live, it needs constantly to be supplied from three distinct sources. It must have food for its digestion, air for its breathing, and vitality in three forms of its absorption. Vitality is the essence of force that, when clothed with matter, it appears as though it were a highly refined chemical element. It exists upon all the planes, but our business for this moment is to consider the manifestation of the physical world. Although the etheric body penetrates every cell in our bodies, there are seven energy centers that direct all lower chemical and metabolizing processes. These are called chakras. Now, realize that these seven centers are seven sets of endocrine glands, which is the lower counterpart of that, and seven different sets of hormones in the body. And, of course, the idea of a lot of the different receptors that we make and the different systems that we make is to focus and work with these different metabolizing process centers. And the outside environment of the planet today, as you well know, tries to interfere with this metabolizing process, calling a lowering of frequency or a lowering of consciousness or a dysfunction of these centers. In other words, incomplete hormones and incomplete utilization of incomplete hormones. The chakra or force centers are parts of connection at which energy flows from one vehicle or body of man to another. Anyone who possesses a slight degree of clairvoyance may see them in them the etheric double when they show themselves as saucer-like depressions or vortices at the surface. By the way, when we talk about the vitality globule really works powerfully within the etheric body of man. It's the area, it works through the center of the spleen. The vitality globule is pulled off of the atmosphere and pulling in the body, and also this correlates to the negative ions. One of the types of negative ion generators that we developed was one that had what's called a vitalized negative ion. In other words, it's the actual kind of negative ion that you get when you're in the sunlight and when you're at the seashore simultaneously, whereas a lot of ion generators just put out a negative ion that really doesn't have any vitality to it. And of course, most ionizer manufacturers do not understand the difference, and they're completely vacant of the proper procedures in their minds of how to really make an ionizer work. When we look at these centers, we look at them as when they're undeveloped, these chakra centers appear in small circles about 2 inches in diameter, growing dully in the ordinary man. But when awakened and vivified, they are seen as blazing, coruscating whirlpools, much increased in size and resembling miniature suns. We sometimes speak of them as roughly corresponding to certain physical organs. In reality, they show themselves at the surface of the etheric double, which projects slightly beyond the outline of the dense body. If we imagine ourselves to be looking straight down into a bell or flower of the convolvulus type, we shall get some idea of the general appearance of a chakra. The stalk of the flower in each springs from the point of the spine, so another view might show the spine as a central stem from which the flowers shoot forth at intervals, showing the opening of their bells at the surface of the body. And on page 133, I have a chart which shows the different number of spokes, the number of chakras in the body, and all these kinds of things. And remember when I made that comparison between the anti-Bolera cell and the black hole in space? Well, that's a giant macrocosmic version of the same thing. You've got a opening of the black hole in space where the space-time singularity is like the opening of a flower, and it terminates at the base of life, where it forms in another planet as a simple kind of cell. Now, all these chakra wheels that we're talking about are perpetually rotating. If you look at the chakras, and we're visualizing this, there's wheels, there's seven different wheels on the body that are rotating, and into the hub or open mouth of each, a force from the higher world is always flowing, a manifestation of the life stream issuing from the second aspect of the solar logos, which we call the primary force, which I touched on earlier. That the force is sevenfold in its nature, and all its forms operate in these centers, although one of them in each case usually predominates over the others. Without this inrush of energy, the physical body could not exist. Therefore, the centers are in operation in everyone, though in the underdeveloped person they are usually sluggish in motion, just forming the necessary vortex or force and no more. In a more evolved man, they may be glowing and pulsating with living light, so that an enormous greater amount of energy passes through them, with the result that there are additional facilities, possibilities open to man. Now, this energy that's coming into the chakras is coming from different seven levels of consciousness, which we talked about earlier. Now, it just doesn't come directly from outer space or from some external area. It actually processes in the chakras from these other dimensions, and these are the parts of the body where it's processed. It's diffused into the body. After it's processed into the body at the chakra centers, then it's diffused into the body throughout, through the action of the blood, which I'll get into a little bit later. And of course, realize that we've talked about the golf ball type characteristic of the nuclear membrane within each cell, which has holes in it, which are, if you look at the size of the nuclear membrane, it's quite small, and these holes are even smaller. The etheric part of the energy, the seven levels, the etheric part now, is disseminated through the nuclear membrane through these little holes. And of course, it has to come in somewhere, so it comes in through the chakra points. The etheric part, of course, is processed through the spleen, and the astral part will be processed through the solar plexus center, and the heart-type energies will be processed through the heart area, and the intelligence is processed through the throat, and all these kinds of things. And that's what, and the processing center that they're going through, of course, is once again called the chakra. Now, this energy, when it comes into each center of the chakra center, from this inner space, it sets up right angles to itself as it enters the physical plane, and that is at the surface of the etheric double. Secondary forces in the undulatory circular motion, just like you could say a bar magnet thrust into an induction coil produces a current of electricity which flows around the coil at right angles to the axis of the direction of the magnet. The primary force itself, having entered the vortex, radiates from it at right angles. But in straight lines, well, actually it radiates at it from right angles, but in straight lines as though the center of the vortex were the hub of the wheel. So look at the chakra as a wheel. It's the best way I can describe it at this point. Is a wheel. You're looking at a spoke-covered wagon wheel. It's flat on your body, just for the sake of explanation. The energy is coming in through where the spokes would be at right angles. By means of these spokes, the force seems to bind the astral and etheric bodies together as though they were grappling hooks. Now, they realize the chakras are turning. If you look at the chart on page 133, you'll see there's four spokes at the base of the spine. The energy is very heavy, very coarse, and slower in a slower vibratory wavelength and less intense. Whereas you get all the way up to the head, you've got 960 spokes, so that's a much finer energy that's permeating in the body there. And all through the different parts of the body, for example, the heart area's got 12 spokes. The throat's got 16. The front chakra in the where the pineal pituitary is 96. The spleen, which we talked about, six spokes. And these energies, so you can see that it takes a much finer energy to get in, to interpenetrate the 960 spokes of rare areas around the crown chakra. The gross pragmatic energy of the base of the spine energy would just bounce off the crown chakra. The body will assimilate it in the right area. It's like if you punched a bunch of holes in a bucket and threw it in the water, the different size holes would leak. The big holes would leak first and the smaller holes would leak later. By means of the spokes, these spokes, the energies I said are being absorbed in the body. The number of these spokes is all different, which I've talked about. Because these spokes are there,
These centers have often been poetically described in Oriental books as resembling flowers. Now then we have the secondary forces. Each of these sweep around saucer-like depressions and has its own characteristic wavelength. Just as the light from a certain color, light has a certain color, but instead of moving in a straight line as the light does, it moves along a relatively large undulation of various sizes, each of which is a multiple of the smaller wavelengths within it. And remember when we talked earlier about the DNA, you can see the relationship of the DNA. And here we are talking about it being absorbed into the DNA. So naturally the DNA, even though all the DNA is the same length, about 39.5 centimeters at birth, they're tuned to different frequencies, and these different frequencies are now being absorbed at the antenna area, which is the chakra. Wavelengths are infinitesimal, and probably thousands of them are included within one of these oscillations. As the forces rush in around the vortex, these oscillations of different size crossing one another in this basketwork fashion produce the flower-like form to which I have referred. It perhaps is still like the appearance of certain saucers or shallow bases or bases of wavy iridescent glass, such as those made in Venice. All of these undulations or petals have a shimmering pavoni effect, like mother of pearl. Yet each of them has usually its own predominant color, which we covered, if you remember correctly, in the meditation. The colors that I was showing you were the colors of the chakras. And naturally, that those are colors of chakras are going to be coming from that level of energy. And, of course, through all of the hydrogen atoms in the body, these energies are also absorbed. This nacreous silver aspect is likened in Sanskrit work as the gleam of moonlight on the water. So, reviewing now, just imagine that the body has energies coming into it, and there's spoked wheels, a four-spoke wheel at the base of the spine, and a 960-spoke wheel at the top of the head. The spoke is going to rotate. It's going to assimilate the energy, the finer energy on the top, the coarser energy on the bottom, and this assimilation and explosion of energy into the body looks like a flower. In impact, the energy is directed into the four directions. If we were, for example, looking at the root chakra, simultaneously where it gradually dissipates into all the cells at the region of impact, causing cell reproduction. Now, the force of impact of this energy coming into the physical plane causes the cells to grow, and the shock of impact causes the four spokes to rotate like a wheel. The force at impact is called a strike. So at the moment this energy hits us, it strikes. Now you got to realize that the Earth is moving around the sun, it's rotating. There's a lot of variations as to where the energy is coming in, so this is changing. The area where a strike occurs is called struck zone. As the wheel rotates from this energy, it marries or balances the secondary or nervous energies in the body. This intermingling is much like a weaver's pattern. So the central nervous system then begins to pick up this energy as its primary force is released at the chakra centers in the body. That's why it's real important with the nuclear receptors to keep that area open, and our environment has a tendency to block this. And of course you can have all kinds of nervous disorders and psychological disorders, because when this energy is blocked, the entire body becomes blocked and the body can't produce the hormones. Because it finally ends up going into consciousness that when the hormones transmit this energy, which is now in the body and stored up into the brain at a later time. These chakras naturally divide into three groups, the lower, the middle, and the higher. They might be called respectively the psychological, personal, and spiritual. The first and second chakras, having few spokes or petals, are principally concerned with receiving into the body two forces which come into it at the physical level. One being the serpent fire from the earth, and the other the vitality from the sun. These centers of the middle group are engaged with the forces which reach man through his personality. Through the lower astral in the case of the lower centers, and the higher astral in the case of the higher centers. And on up into the mind as you get up into the brain area. All these centers seem to feed certain ganglia in the body. The higher centers at the top of the body, and they stand apart from the rest, each being connected with the pituitary body or pineal gland respectively, and they come into action only when a certain amount of spiritual development has taken place. So even though you're receiving these seven colors of light, when you start getting up into the white light, you don't really process it properly. It's mostly processed into the violet, and even when it's processed into the violet in the average man, it has to be transmuted into the white to reach the higher consciousness. imagine as we, you know, continue that your relative point of view is outside yourself, looking back and seeing a front or side view. Every human on this planet is out of balance in one way or another. I'm sure you're all aware, otherwise we wouldn't be here. So as energy from a balanced universe such as ours strikes our bodies through our bodies, entering our bodies at the chakra points, and I show these in different drawings in Death of Ignorance on page 134, 5, and 6. At the exact moment of the strike, it encounters our imbalanced bodies, it is put into a state of temporary shock, meaning that when this beautiful energy comes to our body isn't quite ready for it because we're not perfectly balanced, otherwise we wouldn't be here in the first place. The energy is like shocked a little bit. Now when this shock hits us, when this energy strikes, we have what we call striking energy, creating a small shock. In other words, the energy hits the spoke of the wheel. The shock only lasts a split second, but a lot happens during the shock. Namely, it's like a spark of life. Remember when the earth was formed, the four amino acids were here, but it took a spark of electricity to start the life process to create the life forms in our body. The four basic amino acids had to be energized. The shock only lasts a split second, but mainly during that shock, life is sustained in our bodies and gravity is created. So bam, the energy is hitting our bodies now. Some of the energy balances after it's gone into shock. Some of it balances now. This perfectly sustains life in the form, while some of the energy collides with the form, meaning this is the shock waves. This energy is called strike zone energy and causes fusion at three etheric zones, which we talked about earlier, during the reaction. And the four levels of solids are now created. Although all form is created this way, the spirit enters the chakras first. It's the molding essence. Energy permeates all forms this way and forms patterns. If viewed at various intersections, the strike itself is a fusion pattern, and a network of strikes can be visualized macroscopically as one of our, what I call, pyridine orbs. If you look at some of the orb structures that we make because they're harmonious to the human body, and they go through the universe receiving a similar energy from different stars on a lower level, the way the energy from the stars and the magnetic fields of the earth collides, it creates a similar field which enhances this in the body. And if you look at some of the structures, you'll see what this field looks like because the antennas are created in the shape of the field, because by creating them in that shape, it makes them resonate into the human body quicker. This angle at which this collision occurs is always like a cross, and this has to do with the mythology of Jesus being crucified on a cross, because when this energy comes at right angles, as it should, it creates the shock wave and, of course, the absorption wave at the same time. The orb is a framework of the strike and struck zones forming all form as we know it. It also is the shape of the physical and etheric body relationship. The orb is also a crystal. The crystal, remember, is the perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time, as Sannyasi had told me a long time ago. Now, as spirit, the energy, which is naturally spiritual, is trapped into the form to animate it, it awakens to a spontaneous desire to return to its source once it experiences this form refeeling. In other words, the form, the body, is now feeling this energy come in. As soon as it is aware of the form feeling it, it tries to escape. If the form is clear and moving with the spirit, it becomes lighter. If it is caught in the desire of the lower nature, energy will be trapped and the form becomes heavier. In other words, if the spiritual energy came and it became transmuted into sexual energy, it would be so heavy that it would cause the form to reproduce. But if it were lighter, it would cause the person to become enlightened. Now, one is not good or better than the other. It just is a matter of fact. The constant vacillation between the two natures, in other words, when the spirit trying to escape and the spirit being trapped, constitutes gravity. Gravity is the interchange of energy from seven planes of consciousness. It is a mutual force causing a downward thrust of seven energies coming from the upward-inward direction of spirit, which we talked about the seven levels. So in other words, as the energy came into our consciousness.
That's pretty good stuff. That actually will help you learn to levitate, and we have to cut it off. We'll finish that next week. So anyway, thank you for listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, March 20, I think 3rd, 4th, somewhere in there. 21, yeah, 23rd, I think, yeah.